listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. And it's time for a little more Worldview Watch. Haven't done this for a few days because we've been spending extra time in the text. But the goal of this time period is to help you sharpen your mind to know, well, what's going on out in the world and to be able to parse it with your faith. And part of that, part of knowing what's going on today is always knowing and understanding what went on yesterday. As CHI, Concordia Historical Institute, is fond of saying, you don't know where you're going unless you know where you've been. Today, I have as a guest within me, not our regular, we got Pastor Todd, Friel. Zitlow. Todd Zitlow, and a classmate of mine, who, God, what a dud I am, here to talk about a document discovered, well, we've had it for a while, but kind of re-bringing to the surface, catalog so it can be found at CHI, dealing with some post-World War II minutes, which you might think, well, that sounds boring, but no, it's amazing what our Synod was about back then.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the main blessings and gifts that Concordia Historical Institute provides to the church is the retention of primary source documents, documents that exist almost nowhere else in the world, that shed light on how the church went about its work, how individuals went about their work. You know, it sheds light on mission activities in all kinds of different ways. And one of the major projects that we're currently working on over at Concordia Historical Institute is to start cataloging our rare books. CHI has always had an incredible collection of rare books, but they've been largely undiscoverable by the users, by the public, because there was no way for them to access it through the internet. So now we're aggressively cataloging our rare books. And as a part of that, our cataloger, Anna Horton, provides a report mostly monthly on the books that she's recently cataloged and draws attention to the ones that are particularly rare. And I just grabbed one of those that she cataloged here in the last 2 months that stood out to me. And we're going to talk a little bit about what it contains and the windows it opens for historical research.
Right. Let me jump in real fast and just talk about primary source so that people know what you mean by that. You know, if you read in a book and it says, you know, the book's written in 1982 and it says in 1943, the Missouri Synod was working with the German churches to bring mercy work across to them. Well, that's called a secondary source. It's somebody talking about something else that happened, as opposed to a primary source is somebody from 1942 writing, we went over there, we did this, here's what we saw. So you're getting it. From the horse's mouth, as it were. And for history, this is huge.
This is exactly what this document is. President Behnken, the president of the Synod at that time, was chosen to go over to Europe right in the immediate wake of World War II to assess the situation, assess the needs of the people, not just in Germany, but in Europe generally, and to ask the question, what can we do? What can we do to help the people that are there, not just with their physical needs, but also with their spiritual needs? And according to this report, which came out in December 28th, 1945, so just after the war ended, in fact, they indicate that they're some of the very first people, if not the very first people, to go over there as civilians to evaluate the situation. In fact, the scenario was still so militaristic that he indicates they can't even hand out a pencil without approval from the military. It's still so military in terms of its structure and its organization. It's the government is under the auspices of the military. So it's really early on in terms of the reconstruction. The Emergency Planning Council, which was organized by the Missouri Synod, was very aggressive in trying to go over there and meet the needs of an incredibly devastated and hurting people. I'm not going to go into some of the details that are in this document because they're so devastating. Here we are on a nice Thursday morning. Right. You're having your cup of coffee. You're driving into work. But the descriptions of the devastation in Germany and the land surrounding is so is so moving. That's one direction, of course, that you could take the research. But we're not going to go there this morning. But you can obviously understand the devastation was great.
Right.
You know, thousands and thousands of lives, millions of lives were devastated in different ways.
Well, let me just say, you know, it wasn't just the Jews that were being killed. I mean, that was a big issue. But you had other groups that were also being murdered. You had people who were basically thrust into poverty, high levels of poverty, as their resources were being taken to support the war effort. And by the end, the government can't support the civilization anymore. And so everybody's suffering. You know, you lost a major war in which you gave everything that you had and your resources, and it's all gone.
Absolutely. Like you say, I mean, it touched everybody. I mean, the statistics they list in here in terms of the number of buildings, simply the buildings that are destroyed,
gone.
The percentage. Yeah. 60% of all buildings in the nation are destroyed. I mean, that's people's homes.
I can't even
offices.
Imagine.
No,
yeah.
No, just rubble, the rubble in the streets. And they talked about, I think, 249 of the 250 largest cities in Germany were bombed and had extensive damage.
Right.
So it touched everybody.
Everything,
it just wasn't going to, there just wasn't anybody untouched by it. So part of the, another reason for looking at this document, one of the things that caught my attention is I had sat in a class on Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis with Drs. Bodie and Dr. Herman, and they really place an important emphasis on the events after World War II in the run-up to the controversial events that happened on Concordia Seminary in the 1970s.
Right.
That the theological interplay that happened at the Bad Bowl conferences, which happened right after World War II, which initially were intended for us to go over and help the German nation, the European peoples, to recover, there was a theological exchange, and some of that influence came over and led up to the walkout. So,
and that is to say that when we were trying to go over to help the Germans, some of their scholars, theologians, pastors with a very different view of Scripture began conversing with our leaders, and it was a kind of a cross-pollination effect. And that different view of Scripture was what we call historical criticism, the idea that the Bible is just a historical document, it's got some errors in it, and this led to a pretty nasty fight. We don't need to get into that now, but a pretty nasty fight in the 70s.
Absolutely.
Some of this starting way back right after World War II.
Right. Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not qualified to get into all the details theologically because I just can't get there mentally. But it's the interaction between the two groups was clear. I mean,
right.
You had a silence for a number of years during the war. The borders were cut. The conversation stopped and then it reopened right after the war. And so you had some intermingling of ideas.
Now, you mentioned a name, and is one of my favorite theologians, a guy named Hermann Sasse, who actually at this point in his life did have a defunct view of Scripture, which later I believe he repented of. But what was their connection with him? They ran into him over there.
Right. In their meetings, they traveled 17,000 miles over the course of 10 weeks, just met with all kinds of people, the leadership of the military government, the leadership of all the churches that were in Germany. And one of the men that they met with while they were over there was Hermann Sasse. And of course, Hermann Sasse, his influence continues to this day. In fact, it may be as high as it's ever been.
Right.
People continue to read his work. In fact, a book just came out this last year on Hermann Sasse and his articles that he wrote. So the influence is continuing. And it's interesting for me to see his name show up in this report as someone
they talked to.
And they even mention Scripture actually in here as a part of the discussion that's going on. And Hermann Sasse's view that a better description can still be had.
Huh.
So he's not, at least according to this, he's indicating he doesn't have a finished view of it, but that he still thinks that more work can be done.
Right. Sasse, for those who don't know his name at all, I mean, maybe you don't know the name Bonhoeffer either, but a guy named Dietrich Bonhoeffer was a very famous Lutheran underneath the Nazi regime, largely because he died.
Yes.
He ended up trying to participate in an attempt to kill Hitler, and they were captured, and he was put to death. And it's not that he wasn't a decent enough theologian. He had some holes, I think, in his theology, but he certainly has left us some works. And because of his death, though, his name has spread outside of Lutheranism. There are people not Lutherans who know him. Sasse did kind of the same thing. He didn't participate in any attempt to murder him, but he wrote very clearly and boldly against Nazism right in the midst of it, which was an incredibly dangerous thing to do.
Absolutely.
Even as a German, he was protected, from my understanding, from getting fired by the dean who was over him at the school, who more or less just kind of ran interference the entire time. But those works that he's left to us from suffering during that time, just having read them myself, some of the most influential theology I've ever read. His piercing mind, his ability to cut through the darkness with a focus on our word and sacrament ministry, it's just beautiful stuff.
Yeah, and we continue to mine his writings for our thoughts today.
Right.
I mean, even yourself mentioning there. So this shows you, that this was a lively events happening in real time involving real people, real ideas. And one of those men was Herman Sasse.
Well, it so much lays the seeds, too. Like, you draw the connection to Seminex or to the walkout or to the seminary in exile, whatever you want to call it, the 1970s, the battle for the Bible. Is the Bible got errors in it or not? And you think, well, we won that, right? We have the Bible. Well, the fight always goes on. And as soon as you turn your back on your enemy is when you're going to have some trouble. And so trying to understand the ties and then also how much of our the way we relate to each other as Missourians and Lutherans, the way we relate to those we disagree with, I think, has been tremendously influenced by the way Seminex was settled, by the political battle as opposed to the dialogue and conversation, you know, working toward an end. And so my point here being all of this is you don't know where you're going unless you know where you've come from. All the way back to 1942, these lines of theology running through history, they bring us to where we are.
Yeah, and it's challenging because obviously no matter where you start your story, there's always pre-story.
More before it, right?
Yeah. So you always have to have a bit of a context to everything you do, and which I think is what's interesting about this document is it contextualizes the time. It shows a great picture of everything that's happening post-World War II and our high level of interest. In fact, I was talking to one of our research assistants at CHI, Laura Mars, and she was mentioning how there was this program nationwide where churches collected clothing, food items, other items to be sent over to Germany. And maybe some of the listeners out there were a part of that. They remember gathering that material and sending it over. And this report in this document predates that because they weren't allowed to send it yet. But in their negotiations, in fact, this document even talks about meeting with President Truman at the time to encourage him to open the doors and say, let us go in and help people. Let us bring in food, clothing. Let us bring in Bibles, literature to support their spiritual needs and their physical needs. And some of the listeners out there maybe were a part of that.
Yeah. It's cool to see throughout our history as the Missouri Synod, how mercy has been at the forefront of our gut reaction to things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that we go out and we do where there is need. And that continues today. It's one of our strengths in the world. With about a minute left here, any closing thoughts?
Well, obviously, I want everyone who's doing North American history to come to Concordia Historical Institute and check out our primary source materials. But I also want to quickly remind everyone that we'll be opening a new museum exhibit in February 18th. If you're interested in seeing old rare books, some up to 500 years old, and Reformation coins and medals, come out to Concordia Historical Institute on Saturday, February 18th for our grand opening of our new museum exhibit.
2 p.m.?
Oh, boy, you got me.
Go to the website. What's the website?
ConcordiaHistoricalInstitute.org.
Thank you, Pastor Todd Zitlow of Concordia Historical Institute, my guest in studio right now. Again, you don't know where you're going if you don't know where you've been. The confession of the past, the mistakes, and the strengths. These are the things that guide, well, how we would try to parse where we are today. How do we not make the same error? How do we continue to show mercy in this age of darkness and decay? How do we continue to learn from fathers who suffered before us, even under such darkness as the Nazi regime? As Herman Sasse reminds us, the church is going to survive no matter what. And when it's a man like him saying it to you, well, maybe your troubles aren't quite as bad as you think they are. You're listening to His Time on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news. Back with the weather and then morning prayer up next.